Welcome to this podcast of sermons at CUNA United Methodist Church.
A reading from the book of Joshua, second chapter. Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent out from Shittim two men as spies. Go, look over the land, check out Jericho. They left and arrived at the house of a harlot named Rahab and stayed there. The king of Jericho was told, "We've just learned that men arrived tonight to spy out the land. They are from the people of Israel." The king of Jericho sent word to Rahab, "Bring out the men who came to you to stay the night in your house. They're spies. They've come to spy out the whole country." The woman had taken the two men and hidden them. She said, "Yes, two men did come to me, but I didn't know where they'd come from." At dark, when the gate was about to be shut, the men left. "But I have no idea where they went. Hurry up, chase them. You can still catch them." She had actually taken them up on the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax that were spread out for her on the roof. So the men gave chase down the Jordan Road toward the fords. As soon as they were gone, the gate was shut. Before the spies were down for the night, the woman came up to them on the roof and said, "I know that God has given you the land. We're all afraid. Everyone in the country feels hopeless. We heard how God dried up the waters of the Red Sea before you when you left Egypt, and what he did to the two Amorite kings east of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you put under a holy curse and destroyed. We heard it and our hearts sank. We all had the wind knocked out of us. And all because of you, you and God, your God, God of the heavens above and gods of the earth below. Now promise me by God, I showed you mercy. Now show my family mercy and give me some tangible proof, a guarantee of life for my father and mother, brothers and sisters, everyone connected with my family. Save our souls from death." "Our lives are yours," said the men, "but don't tell anyone our business. When God turns this land over to us, we'll do right by you in loyal mercy." She lowered them down out a window with a rope because her house was on the city wall to the outside. She told them, "Run for the hills so your pursuers won't find you. Hide out there 3 days and give your pursuers time to return. Then get on your way." The men told her, "In order to keep this oath you made us swear, here is what you must do. Hang this red rope out the window through which you let us down and gather your entire family with you in your house, father, mother, brothers, sisters. Anyone who goes out the doors of your house into the street and is killed, it's his own fault. We aren't responsible. But for everyone within the house, we take full responsibility. If anyone lays a hand on them, it's our fault. But if you tell anyone of our business here, the oath you made us swear is canceled. We're no longer responsible." She said, "If that's what you say, that's the way it is," and sent them off. They left, and she hung the red rope out the window.
There was no room at the inn. A young family, pressured from every side, searching for sanctuary. Pressure isn't just ancient history. Rahab once opened her door to strangers. Today, many still wait for someone to make room for them. In our own cities, in our own neighborhoods, families seek safety while fear and uncertainty close in around them. John the Baptist prepared the way for Jesus. and we're invited to prepare room in our hearts too. Room in our relationships, like Mary and Elizabeth. When life feels impossible, like Joseph, we seek hope in unexpected places where God makes space, even in mangers and unplanned moments. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph once fled danger to survive, and today, so many still run from violence, persecution, and the threat of their family being torn apart. The call of Christmas is the same now as it was then, to see, to welcome, to protect, and to create a world where there is room for all.
Our worship series is called Sanctuary, Room for All. Today, as we begin this season of Advent, these 4 weeks in preparation for Christmas, perhaps you are maybe you've already started decorating, perhaps you've started shopping, maybe you've started baking, knowing that Christmas is coming. I started my Christmas cake. It's a British tradition that I started several years ago. It's a cake that you make about Thanksgiving. It's a dense, natural fruit cake, and then it soaks in rum for a month. And at Christmas, that alcohol will be gone, and it will be rich and moist and amazing. So our Advent season is a time of waiting. A time of waiting for God, a time of finding sanctuary in God. This worship series is called Sanctuary. Sanctuary, those holy places where we make room for all. According to dictionary.com, the word sanctuary means a sacred or holy place. It's a place where God is. It's the word used for the temple, the word used for the tabernacle in Jerusalem. It's the word that is used for the center part of the church, where the altar is, the sanctuary. And it also means a place of refuge. So sanctuary is a place of holiness and a place of refuge. Sanctuary is a sacred place where God is, and it's where we are invited to be. In sanctuary, we are with God in safety with others. In this series, we're going to see how God makes room for all of us and about how we are called to join God in making room for everybody. Sanctuary is one of my favorite words, along with solidarity. Solidarity is that individuals coming together unified for a common cause. It was during the labor movement in the early 20th century, it was solidarity that brought workers together to negotiate with one voice for that common cause, bringing about such unheard of things at the time as the weekend, as paid time off, child labor laws, safety standards. It was solidarity that made that happen. Solidarity was the name of the labor union in Poland that was instrumental in bringing down communism. Solidarity is holy action, where we put ourselves alongside others for a common cause, for everyone's well-being and standing together. In the civil rights movement in this country, it was solidarity in the black community that brought about amazing reforms in our country. Solidarity is something we naturally do when we are in peril. When we see others in peril, we want to go join them. I remember in the days following 9/11, how everyone around the country came together, supporting each other, praying together, taking care of each other. It was an amazing moment of solidarity. When disaster strikes, people reach out and help each other, working as one. Sometimes solidarity is joining people in a cause that directly affects us. And sometimes solidarity is joining people in a cause that doesn't directly affect us. And in that case, we call ourselves an ally. During the civil rights movement, the allies were white people who joined the black community and put themselves in peril, took the risks and the beatings and the suffering, standing alongside their black brothers and sisters in solidarity. Solidarity is putting yourself close enough to those who suffer that when disaster or attack happens, you get hit. Christian peacemakers go into war zones, risking their lives to actively build peace. Just this month, as food stamps were cut off, we saw our whole community come together, people who had food on their shelves, donating and reaching out to those who didn't. Solidarity is a holy action of putting yourself close enough to those in peril that you can get hit. And that is the kind of solidarity that God has with us when God came to be one of us. It says, if you call yourself an ally to a group of people and you aren't getting hit by the stones being thrown at them, then you aren't standing close enough. God got really close. God got really close to us, relying on human hospitality, standing so close that God got hit. God took a risk in becoming a human being, relying on us. Have you ever offered hospitality that was risky or you felt might be dangerous? When COVID arrived, I was serving an Episcopal church half-time and serving Corpus Christi House half-time as volunteer coordinator. Corpus Christi House is a day shelter for the homeless in Boise. And do you remember when COVID came and it was like a tsunami? We could see it coming, but we didn't know what it was going to be. And then we went into lockdown. And at that time, the wisdom was everyone 65 and older was at greatest risk. So they were the ones that needed to stay home and have no contact. Well, Corpus, like most nonprofits, is run by retired people. Overnight, we went from 80 volunteers to 6. How do you run a homeless shelter with 6 people? It's rough. So we had to get creative. We talked about shutting down, but we felt strongly that the hospitality offered to those who were homeless was just so essential. Corpus was the only place to get a shower, to do your laundry. We had lockers for people. We had mail. The mail room at Corpus Christi House is larger than many small post offices in rural towns. So we knew we had to keep going, but how would we do it? So we moved all the coffee and food outside. We made it so to take a shower or to do laundry, you had to sign up for a time outside and then wear a mask when you went inside. Corpus is a small place. And before COVID, there would be 100 people smashed in there, so tight that folks were standing along the walls in the hallway. So 6 feet apart was a real challenge. So that's what we do. We'd let people in, you know, just a few at a time to take showers and do laundry. And then was wearing masks. And there's people who liked wearing masks when that's what we had to do. And there were people who didn't, but did it anyway, because that's what you're supposed to do. Homeless people were in the don't like wearing masks group. They did not like it. Their lives had been turned upside down. The place where they hung out with people, with friends, where they felt welcomed was gone. They lost their place to visit. They lost their place to feel welcome and not feel like an outsider all the time. And now they had to wear a mask. And many mentally ill people in our society, because there is very little safety net, fall into homelessness. So that's where a lot of mentally ill people are. According to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, in 2024, 67% of homeless folks had a mental health disorder and 22% had serious mental illness. So I was one of the people standing at the door at Corpus Christi House saying, sign up, you can't go in until it's your time, you have to wear a mask. Some people got pretty upset. There was one day a guy came and wanted to come in and was screaming at me. And I was, you know, using my calm voice. You can go in as soon as you put a mask on. And he is screaming and screaming and he's pounding on the table. And You know, and I'm just like, okay, what to do? As he, like, I just am trying to figure out what to do. And I put my hand, okay, there's my phone. If I call 911, it takes 3 minutes for the cops to arrive. A lot can happen in 3 minutes. And as this is happening, I notice out of the corner of my eye, some of the regulars are just kind of nonchalantly headed this way. And suddenly I realize there's four guys between me and this guy who's screaming at me. And pretty soon, he wanders off, muttering to himself. And I had felt like I was in danger. And it turned out there were four guys right there, ready to make sure I was in no danger. Sometimes we offer hospitality and it feels risky. And it's not as much as it seems. Perhaps you've had a time when you offered hospitality and it was risky. When we offer hospitality to God, it's often risky because we put ourselves with people in peril. And Scripture has a lot to say about this. Rahab put herself in peril. So when the Israelites came into the Jordan and took Jericho, scholars think it was somewhere between 1,200 and 1,400 years before Jesus. God saved the Israelite people, led them across the Red Sea, led them to Canaan. God told them to conquer the land. And so they crossed the Jordan. God stopped the Jordan. They crossed the Jordan, and then they headed over to Jericho. So Jerusalem is way up in the mountains from Jericho. Jericho is quite low. Down at this is the Jordan River coming through here. At the bottom is the Dead Sea. All of this is below sea level. It's actually a tectonic rift where two continental plates are separating and the valley in between is actually below sea level. So Jericho was a walled city. It's actually, scholars say, the oldest inhabited walled city on earth. There is evidence of walls around Jericho back to 8300 BC. That's 10,000 years ago. People had already built walls around Jericho. So we're told the spies went to Jericho and entered the house of a harlot named Rahab. Now Rahab had already heard about the people, the Israelites, as everyone had. And then we hear her testimony. The Lord your God is God in heaven above and in the earth below. The Lord your God is God. And in that moment, she throws her loyalty to the God of these people. And so they work out that the spies go and they're going to put a red cord so that her family will be spared. And the spies leave, and God leads the Israelites to conquer Jericho. And he says, dress up in your warrior clothes, but then you're not going to attack like normal. I'm going to have you walk around the city quietly for 6 days. And then on the seventh day, I'm going to have you blow trumpets and yell. And the walls fell down. And they go in and they take Jericho. Rahab's family was saved. And Rahab joined the people of God. And that is not the end of the story for Rahab. In the Gospel of Matthew, it begins with Jesus' family tree. Has anyone, when you were a kid, opened up and you read so-and-so begat so-and-so? Do you remember that? And I remember thinking, begat? What is that? Why? That's a lousy way to start a story. When Matthew wrote his gospel, first off, he was writing to grown-ups, not kids, and using language that would have been a lot easier to understand than begat. But he wanted to be really clear that everyone understood Jesus was a direct descendant of David, a direct descendant of Abraham, that he was in the family tree of Abraham and the Israelites and King David. And as it goes through that, right in the middle is Rahab's name. Rahab was the great-great-grandmother of King David. Jesus was a direct descendant of Rahab. Rahab made room for those spies. Room when pressure was closing in. Now, if those of you who are artists, perhaps picked up about that red cord and the parallels with the red on the doorposts of the story of the Passover, where the Israelites put the blood on the doorposts, and that's how the angel of death would know to pass over. And now again we have red saving people. This is a wood carving from 1881 of Rahab and the spies getting away. The decision to offer hospitality to spies, to throw her loyalty to God, was risky. And it changed her trajectory. And it changed her history and her family's history. Rahab was under pressure from different sources. And in making room for strangers, she finds sanctuary in God. As we enter this Advent season, how is God inviting you to make room for others? How is God inviting you to make room even as pressure closes in? As we look forward to Christmas, perhaps some of us, like myself, are anticipating some December stress. The tension of getting everything ready in time. The tension of all the year-end pressures, and likely the tension of family get-togethers. I will tell you, I have done a lot of funerals, and every single family has, you know, struggles. I have yet to meet a family where everyone gets along great and all the history is lovely. Every family has problems, and at the holidays, we get together with our families who have problems. And there is always some level of tension. And that's who we are. Holidays are a time when we make space, even for tension, even as pressure is there. Holidays are a time of being all together now. And holidays are a time of finding sanctuary in God. Finding sanctuary on Sunday morning at church, a time of refuge from all the busyness of the holidays, of welcoming and making room for everyone. And so this Advent, I encourage you to actively join God in making room. Making room when pressure is closing in, making room in your heart, making room in your relationships, and making room for hope. As we go through Advent and this Christmas season, every week I'm going to share with you a movie that goes with the theme. You can think of it as a reference or something to watch this week. So this week it is Home Alone. That was made in 1990. Who's seen Home Alone? I have talked with more than one person that this is their very favorite Christmas movie. So in this movie, this kid is home alone, and his sanctuary is the house. The house is defending him from intruders as they're coming in. And that is lovely. But what I see is a kid home alone and a lot of destruction. And so that's upsetting for me. So an alternate movie, if you can't stand watching a house be destroyed, is A Christmas Carol, which is another movie with the theme of making room when pressure closes in. I want to leave you with the story of Dorothy Day, who is a person who made room when pressure closed in. Dorothy was in her early 30s. She was successful. By the time she was in her early 30s, she was a successful author. She lived in the early 20th century. She'd been involved in the labor movement, you know, in the teens and 20s. Was actively involved in women's suffrage. One of the things she noticed, she wrote about when she was in the labor union movement, was communists who were atheists and did not believe in the afterlife were risking their lives and dying for their fellow workers, and Christians who believed in an afterlife were not. Well, Jesus got a hold of her, as Jesus does. And she became Christian, but she was a different kind of Christian. She was living in New York City in 1933 at the height of the Great Depression. Unemployment was high. A third of the population of New York was homeless, living on the streets. And she was a writer, so she started a newspaper, and she said every church should open a house of hospitality for the homeless because homelessness was just so pervasive. And pretty much the churches didn't, but people showed up at her apartment and said, "Are you a house of hospitality?" And she made room. And pretty soon, there was a whole lot of people living in her house, and pretty soon people are bringing soup, and her front room has become a soup kitchen. And people are hearing about this all over the country and inspired by what she's doing, and there are houses of hospitality all over the country now, inspired by what Dorothy did. She started a movement. She made room when pressure was closing in. Dorothy said yes to God, actively working in our world to make room. And she became part of God making room for others, just as we are called to.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is preached almost always by our pastor, Reverend Mia Crossway. CUNA United Methodist Church is a community on a mission to make disciples for the transformation of the world. To support this podcast and the missional priorities of this church, go to cunaumc.org and click on Give. Any amount helps. And if you're kind enough to share your contact information with us, we'll continually send you things.